Everybody, my guest on the show today is Dr. Eugene K. Choi. He's a business and performance coach, and I would say just as important, a three-time dad, including a very little one. So we were just catching up on whether he got his sleep the night before. Sounds like you are ready to rock with this podcast. Eugene, I'm so glad we made this happen finally. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, man.
Yeah. So did you get a good night's sleep last night?
A little less than usual, but I'm okay.
And you're coming early, so you're at home, looks like. Yeah. So you're in LA.
Yeah.
So you're out in California. So it's a little after nine. We're recording this at noon Eastern. So thanks for being on. Hopefully the kid's doing all right and you're doing okay and everybody's doing well. So before we get started, since I mentioned 3X Dad, how young is your son?
The youngest one is what? Must be 10 weeks now, 10 weeks old.
Yeah. So you're talking like new human.
Yeah, newborn.
Yeah. All right, Eugene, I know we got a lot to talk about today. You and I have gotten to know each other over the last year, and I'm really excited to bring your brilliance to everybody listening today. So let's kick it off and talk about, and let me ask you, what's something that you nerd out about?
I nerd out a lot about, I guess, long story short, just the science behind performance, right? How our brains operate. It's also at an energetic level, whether it's, you want to talk like quantum physics and things like that, depending on the rabbit hole you want to go down. But those are the things I go deep down into, especially for the personal development space, because I realize there's a lot more depth that we have now that can actually create better results.
Yeah. So interesting. I have a client who said to me, I just don't know that I have a high level of drive.
Mm.
She relates to herself as not having a high level of drive.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I relate to myself as having a very high level of drive. So I'm like, I don't know what that feels like. But when we talk about performance coaching, I'm curious what you hear in that, or like what comes up for you as somebody who's an expert in this when somebody says, I don't feel like I have a high level of drive.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I, if you wanted to go into it, the first thing I usually go into is the mechanics of all of this, right? So if we just understand some really basic things about our brain, the operating system that we have, right, which is also happens to be the most powerful piece of technology in the world, right? It's right between our ears. It's to understand one basic thing, one big aha moment from all the research I've done over the years, was that your brain operates in one of two states. It's that simple. It's either operating in what's called a survival state or what I call an executive state, okay? So the thing to understand about these two states is the survival state is the part of your brain that's really needed when your life's actually in danger. So we're talking like a tiger's in front of you about to eat you, or there's a gun being pointed to your head, there's a threat. Because that we need that part of the brain to turn on when we're in danger because it's a reactive mode. Your brain needs to be reacting without thinking in a life-threatening scenario. Because if you sit there and start thinking, you might die, right? But the thing to understand about that, though, is it's cutting you off from accessing some amazing parts of yourself, right? This is the part of your brain that can do critical thinking, problem-solving, empathy. Your drive comes from here, by the way. So when we're lacking drive...
From your executive state.
Exactly. So...
Interesting.
And we'll go into the nuances of it, right? But if you want like a true drive, we're talking like inspiration, motivation, not in a superficial level, and I'll distinguish it in a little bit, but that it comes from your executive state, right? But the problem is research shows that we're in the survival state where we're not accessing these things for more or less about 70% of our adult life. Not because we're running away from saber-toothed tigers every single day, but the brain's perceiving a lot of these emotions that are uncomfortable that we feel on a daily basis. And it perceives it as a threat. Why does it perceive it as a threat? Because there's research that shows that emotional pain can be just as painful as physical pain. Mm-hmm. So all that fear, anxiety, stress, frustration, right? You and I were talking about Meta just now too, right? Before the conversation. It can probably trigger a lot of fear in people. At the not knowing what's going to happen next. So our brains are wired to survive at the end of the day because it kept us alive this long. And one of the biggest triggers are things like unpredictability, uncertainty, right? Because when we're cavemen, the primitive days, if you go into uncertain territory, you might get killed by a wild animal. So we're just wired for survival, but because we're in it so much more often than we used to be, because of the amount of stress we experience on a daily basis now, it's cutting us off from accessing these parts of ourselves that we really need.
Mm. So let's, I have about 100 questions, and I think we're going to actually answer quite a few of them as we go through here. So I'm going to continue on and we're going to answer them. And I want to relate this to sports. I'm a big sports person.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Before we do that, let's talk about something that is inside of your comfort zone that you know is outside of somebody else's. So this is something that Eugene, like, let's go, let's do it. And you know, other people like, no. Or in your case, it sends them into that state, not their executive state.
Mm-hmm.
So what is something for you that is comfortable for you and you know other people either will not do it or it's very uncomfortable for them?
Yeah. So for me, I think I've gotten comfortable with just going down the rabbit hole, going deep. When you hear someone say something like what you mentioned, so it's like, I don't feel like I have a drive anymore. There's reasons for that. And it usually stems from some sort of fear, some sort of programming that got programmed in the brain and all that good stuff. So it's just unpacking that. That's kind of where my comfort zone became as a coach, to really just hold that safe space without judgment, to unpack that with the person that's willing to do it. Because like you said, not everyone's willing to go there. Because guaranteed there's something there. Whatever we're experiencing, there's some sort of survival behavior going on, usually at an autopilot level, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the crazy part.
Yeah, I love this because now we're going to talk about something that sends you into that state. So what's something that is outside of your comfort zone? And you know, other people, it is in their comfort zone.
Yeah, outside of my comfort zone, I'm actually pretty introverted. So a lot of this like networking and speaking in public, I've done a lot of podcast interviews now too. It's definitely outside my comfort zone. And also, I don't know if it's cultural too, because I'm Asian, right? Culturally, it's like, it's a thing to like, don't ruffle feathers, just stay with the crowd, be quiet, right? Which is unfortunate, right? Especially with like things like you've seen in the pandemic and all that kind of stuff with all the racism happening. But yeah, like that's kind of outside my comfort zone, that I've had to rewire myself to do more of, right? Putting myself out.
Yeah, there. I was going to say my next question, I think you answered, is you've had to do some self-coaching around how to generate past that thing. Without getting too deep into it, like that's the opposite for me, right? Like room full of people, I don't know, I could care less. There's no feelings of anything other than like, oh, these are some new people I'm about to meet. So I'm curious, like the survival state and what it actually means to your brain to walk in a room when you're introverted and you don't like networking. Would I assume, are they going to like me? Are they not going to like me? It's like the classic, am I going to fit into society? Because like, am I going to be left alone? And as a caveman, leaving alone is I need to build my own fire and hunt my own food. So it's all these things just like wrap up into that. So interesting.
Right. Yeah. And what's even more interesting is it's what I found most of the time is actually not a personality. Like I'm saying I'm an introvert, but mixed into that is like you're saying, when I'm going up on a stage, I'm like, will they like me? Will they not like me? It's not because I'm introverted. It's because I already carry a fear, a belief that I've been carrying that's usually not true. For me, that was like, I don't matter. My voice doesn't matter.
I don't matter.
People don't care. Yeah, I don't matter. My voice doesn't matter. People don't care about me. Like I had a lot of that kind of narrative going on in my brain because of everyone has something because of their unique life experiences, right? Like I had the broken family. Dad left behind, you know, us when I was a teenager, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, like I think that's kind of where, and it wasn't just self-coaching. Like I received coaching around a lot of this stuff. Yeah. Sometimes you can't see the label from inside the jar, right?
No, this is why coaches should always have a coach.
Oh, 100%. Like, I agree with that.
Cause this is a funny thing. Because you're a coach too, we can talk about this. I always say, yeah, but coaches have a left and right shoulder too. They can't see the demons that are on there either. Like, any coach is like, yeah, I've got it all figured out. I'm like, no, you don't.
Yes. Yeah. There's a saying, right? Yeah. There's this saying that we tend to become experts at what we need the most for ourselves, right?
Yeah.
So if you see therapists, a lot of them become therapists because they're already screwed up. They're just trying to figure out a way to not screw themselves up, right? There's a bit of truth to that, right? Whether it's therapists, pastors, like p- positions of leadership.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then the other really interesting thing about this, and I don't know if this has been your experience in running your coaching business, is a lot of time so just to give you a little context here, I'm a leader to coach training program. And one of the things we say is there are many times you'll attract a client who's right ahead of you or right behind you with what you're working on, which can be very infuriating as a coach, but also they like bring the request or the thing that you're working on. You're like, oh, that's specifically the thing that I'm working on.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting. You're like, oh yeah, I could so get in the weeds with you on this.
Yes. Yes. Oh yeah. This is a rabbit hole. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's magical how it works. It's like, it's, you know, I've been doing this work for 4 years now. It's amazing where you're like, oh my gosh, I literally talked to my coach about this at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. 9 a.m. My client's bringing the exact same thing that he wants.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And you're like right one step ahead of them or things like that. That definitely happens. Like,
yeah. Barely. Yeah. Exactly. Barely. But only because I talked for him for an hour. Right. That's awesome, Eugene. So you do speaking. That's actually where I kind of got to know you.
That's right.
I think the first time I actually heard, like, we connected when you spoke to me, and then I think we caught up out there. It was last year. And you do speak on quite a few different things. I want to ask you, if I was to give you 5 minutes and you got to speak to everybody in the world, everybody in the world got to hear the message from Dr. Eugene K. Choi, what is it that you would speak on? And at the end of it, what would you want us to do?
Yeah. If I had 5 minutes, the thing I would focus on is exactly the executive state survival state. And then I'd spend the rest of the time. The most important thing is to understand what it actually looks like. Because the step one is about awareness. If you're not aware of something, you can't change it, right? It's like when you have that piece of broccoli stuck between your teeth, how do you take it out? How do you have the power to take it out unless it comes to your awareness? Someone has to point it out to you, or you see it in the mirror. So I talk a lot about what does survival actually look like? Because in the wild, if your life's actually in danger, it's very obvious. Your brain only knows how to do one of three reactions: fight, flight, freeze. Okay. So you're either going to pick up a weapon to fight and defend yourself. That's fight. You're going to run for your life in flight, or you're going to play dead and freeze. Certain species are famous for doing this, like possums, because their predators like their food alive, so they play dead. I know humans have done it in things like unfortunate situations like wars and genocides and stuff like that, but it's a survival tactic. But the thing is, we're still in it 70% of our adult life. So we need to understand, what does this actually look like in daily life? Because I can guarantee you, it's everywhere. And the first thing that you want to open your eyes to, if you're not aware of it already, is how pervasive it is. It's everywhere. Survival tactics are everywhere. So what does fight look like in everyday life? Some of the more obvious ones are like literally fighting, right? Men who can't handle their emotions get into physical fights at the bar, right? Or it's an argument. If someone said something hurtful to you, so you feel hurt, you argue. You and I are from the East Coast, right? So, you know, road rage. If you see someone get cut off and they get pissed off, they've lost
a little bit of that going on,
right? Right, their ego got hurt, so they fight back by trying to cut the other person off, which, by the way, there's no empathy when you're in survival, so they have no consideration of the danger they're putting the other cars, right? Potentially there's more subtle things with fight. I've noticed a lot of my leaders, entrepreneurs, this is the insidious one: fight, right? The need to be right. That's a fight response. Because we've been hurt at some time for not being right, or we've been penalized, or we've been yelled at, or whatever. So that hurts us. And we feel the need to be right. The people pleasing is a fight response, by the way. Saying yes to people when you don't want to really say yes. Because there's a fear there. What if I'm rejected? What if they don't like me, etc.? That's a fight response. Perfectionism is a fight response. This is a big one. Working hard. This is the thing I was saying earlier, is a nuance. Some people might call it drive.
Yeah.
But depending on the scenario, it could very well be a fight response, a survival tactic. Because why be so driven? It's the need to prove yourself. Prove yourself for what? It usually is a reflection of a belief that's already there, right? I'm not good enough. Yeah. I'm not smart enough. I had a client once that achieved everything you could imagine. Multi-million dollar business, beautiful house, everything. And he was in his 60s now. He's going, why? I thought I achieved everything I wanted. Why am I still unhappy? And he had this aha moment. I've been fighting my whole life. My older brother, I was trying to prove to people that I was better than my older brother, who was an NFL football player. And his football coach in high school literally told him, you're never going to be as good as him. So sometimes we spend our whole life fighting, and it always leads to burnout, and it always leads to a lack of fulfillment. And one of the things I emphasize about the fight response, because this is where it gets confusing for a lot of people, because leaders think I need to be driven, I need to be working hard and overworking 80 hours a week. But if it's in survival, it's literally cutting you off from becoming the best leader you can be. Because I had another client that argued with me, because he went from rock bottom, built a multi-million dollar business, Inc. 5,000 fastest growing company in America, that kind of whole ordeal. And he was like, you don't understand. I hit rock bottom. My second wife left me because she cheated on me. The first wife cheated on me too, by the way. And I still had to pay over $2,000 a month in child support. And I had $0 left in the bank account. And that's the moment I had to put my head down, my shoulder up, and I had to bash through brick wall to get to where I'm at today. It was a very compelling argument. Like, I had to fight. You know what I mean? Like, I had to work my butt off. I'm like, that's very compelling. And look, this is not about what you should have, would have, could have done. The past is the past. But I just want to pose it as a question and curiosity. What if you have the skill of getting into your executive state, even if it's just for a moment, it helps you put your head up and your shoulders down. And you realize these brick walls you thought you had to bash through are only 3 feet wide. Because what survival does is it puts you into tunnel vision. You're missing information. Because if a tiger walks into your room, are you going to look anywhere else except where the tiger is? You go into tunnel vision when you're in survival state, and you're missing out on the opportunities and solutions around you. And it prevents you from that famous saying to work smarter, not harder. Mm-hmm. Working harder isn't always the solution. It usually leads to burnout, and it usually leads to a lack of fulfillment. So anyway, that's the fight response. That's a big one for a lot of people I work with. Flight is things like procrastination, right? I'll put it off till later because there's a fear. What if I do it now? What will people think? What if I screw up, et cetera? Whatever belief that you're carrying about the task. What if I never get this chance again? More subtle ones with flight are things like numbing yourself, right? Some people eat a tub of ice cream. Some people binge watch Netflix, overindulge in things like alcohol, sex, drugs to the point of addiction. No judgment around any of this. We all numb ourselves. Mm-hmm. We all have our poison that we like to pick. It's just about awareness, just bringing awareness to it, speaking this language, getting more awareness. And freeze is when you just don't take action.
Yeah.
Right. When I'm lacking drive, there's usually some sort of freeze component there, by the way. It's just not taking action because of some sort of fear that's already there. So this often happens when you're overwhelmed or stressed. Sometimes it's the more comical ones is when you're literally frozen, when you're caught in a lie, right? You know, you're just kind of eyes wide, frozen. It's your brain going, hey, pretend to not exist right now. And this person, maybe this person will stop interrogating you, which is ironic because it's clearly showing how guilty you are when you're doing that, right?
Maybe they won't see me if I just don't move. Maybe, like, no, I can still see Eugene.
That's exactly what it is. It's just like, maybe they won't see. Your heart actually slows down at times too.
Little kids are good at that.
Exactly. The more subtle ones with that is when, like, it's trauma, you know, when you're in such shock, your body just freezes, it paralyzes in fear. So just being able to see that on a daily basis, I often encourage clients, just make it a game. See what fight responses you notice, flight responses you notice, freeze responses you notice in your daily life, and get good at noticing it on other people too. Right? That's the most important thing to understand. That probably was more than 5 minutes, but that's what I would have talked about.
but if it was real, if it was a real speech, we would have worked, and we would have narrowed it down to 5 minutes, because then I would have played you the Oscar music. Brilliant. Before we go to the commercial break, I wanted to ask you something that I've been, and by the way, I heard a lot for myself and everything you just said, as I'm sure when you share this message with anybody, they're like, yeah. So you had mentioned earlier that your studies and the science of this is 70% survival state, 30% executive state for the average, I would say the average, high performing human people that productive members of society. And we're talking about adults here, right?
We're talking adults, about our adult life. Yeah.
Our adult life.
Yeah. Children are great.
What do you believe is possible through becoming aware of this and choosing different? Like, have you done any either studies or just your opinion on how far can we shift that
in terms of a percentage?
I don't have an
exact math. I don't have an exact math, but definitely getting that ratio down, just getting yourself out of survival state, it's pretty phenomenal on what it's capable of doing, right? What your brain is capable of doing.
So it's like, and I want to say this before you go to the break, it's like, just gonna use Tom Brady as an example. From the game, he had another game winning drive last week, or not this week, actually, November 4th, Sunday, November 4th. And high performance athletes, to me, is a good example of where your survival state coupled with your executive state and being able to shift that 1% makes a huge difference. So it's like, hey, Tom, 44 seconds left, or Patrick Mahomes, 13 seconds left.
Yep.
Those guys, my guess is they say to themselves, who do I want to be in this drive?
Yes.
Like they actually get present to like what they want, who they want.
Exactly.
And then their survival state is their years of practice and training and strength training and flexibility and all the things that allow them to, in the moment, to make the decisions, but they proactively make a decision on who they want to be.
100%.
Which is your executive state. This is
the game changing. Yes, this is the game-changing difference for high-performing athletes is they understand how to tap into that. So there's multiple layers in it, but for the purpose of right now, it's basically, number one is for your body, right? When your body's in survival, think about how much energy it's wasting. Your body thinks it's about to die, all hands on deck, heart's overworking, your lungs are overworking. Oh, yeah. So a lot of high-performance athletes understand how to relax. That's why in between workouts, in between trainings, they're truly tapping into that. And there's a lot of ways to do this, right? Meditation, cold plunges, all that kind of stuff. But from a mindset perspective, think about what happens when you're in survival. Who's the focus on? It's on yourself. This is why a lot of athletes choke, is because they're thinking too much about themselves when they shouldn't be thinking about themselves. You see what I'm saying? Like all this pressure. Now you're going, what if I screw up? What if me? What if me? And they've developed a mental fortitude to not make it about themselves in the moment and just be present and then focus on what they want. And they just stop focusing on themselves and they just lean on their training, right? All the training and effort, they just lean on that. It's a common thing. Like I can give plenty of examples of athletes that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the example that came up for me here before we just roll the break for a second is, I read, and I believe this is true, that in the AFC championship game or the AFC divisional game last year against the Bills, which is arguably like one of the greatest football games in the history of, you know, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is actually wired up and they had some like actual like biometrics on him. When he was on the sideline and the defense was out, his heart rate was high. When they got the ball back with 13 seconds, his heart rate went down.
Right. Because you're in the zone.
Which most of us would be like, oh my God, it's on me. Like, what am I going to do? And he actually, you know, I think Dwayne Wade was on a podcast where he talked about this as well, as like he had this ability to just go, oh, it's 5 seconds left. The ball's like, I don't even know what else is around me. I just know who I want to be and what I want to do.
Exactly. Same thing happened when I had a conversation with Jeremy Lin. He was the first Asian NBA basketball player, Lin Sanity. He was talking about how it felt like an out-of-body experience. You literally lose yourself. Like you're just not focused on yourself. And that gets you into an executive state because you're not being selfish, if that makes sense. That's what the survival state is. It's for self-preservation.
Oh, man. Last thing I'll say here is too is, you know, I speak, you speak. This is the number one advice that if you go to any speaking training, they'll say all the skills, all the content, who cares? Make it about the audience.
Exactly.
You're going to be a better 100%. Speaker by definition.
100%.
Amazing, Eugene. 100%. We got all sorts of rabbit holes. We're probably going to keep going down here. This is great.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back after this.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on Talking to Cool People.
All right, Eugene, at this point, I like to have us get to know you a little bit better, and I do it through a very open-ended question. What do you want us to know about you?
That's a great question. I think one thing I would want people to know about me is I'm no more special than anyone else. And a lot of the things I've learned, number one, you know, we stand on the shoulder of giants. Like I just have some, I think the moment I started appreciating more, being more intentional about that, the people that help lift you up in your life, even though you might not deserve it, that was huge for me. And I'm no special than anyone else. And I struggle a lot with being lone wolf, if that makes sense, right? That's the fight mentality, by the way. I'm all alone. No one cares about me. I got to figure everything out myself. It was definitely a pride ego thing because which really is a fear thing, right? Because I don't want it to be proven to me that I don't matter and I'm all alone, which is why I'd rather just as a defense mechanism go it alone, if that makes sense. And it wasn't until that I really became more open and curious and willing to be wrong about what I thought was real and what I thought was right, that things started really opening up for me. And that's one thing I would want people to know about me is I'm no special than anyone else. I just learned over the years. And it's pretty surreal the things that have been happening, right? Whether it's like the filmmaking experience with the viral content, whether it's right, like my viral article, I run a mastermind with 7-figure business owners now. Like I don't know how all of this happened. And I transitioned from a stable career as a clinical pharmacist, right? And here
that's
I am
the doctor Eugene.
Right, exactly. It's a doctor to pharmacy. And then, here I am just dedicating my life and sharing my love for all of this stuff that I've learned and sharing it with others.
Yeah. One thing you said about the you're nowhere special than anyone else really resonated because a lot of people... I think people that we are connected to in communities, we know some people who do some pretty awesome stuff. We both do, right? Like some of them are mutual friends actually. And like, these are people who make a lot of money and kind of do whatever they want. And every single person that you talk to, no matter how successful they are, at least in this space, will tell you they're like not special. It's about the people. It's about knowing these things that you're saying. Like, the way I relate the executive state is in the coach training that I help lead is like, who do you want to be?
Yeah.
Like actually being able to ask yourself that decision in the moment is to me is a good way. Like for me, that's a tactical way to get into an executive state because most people are not going to go, oh, I want to be somebody who attacks and fights. I mean, some people will, but all these people that I know that do great things, and I think I put you and I there as well. Like we, you know, I do great things. I know you do great things too. And we serve awesome people. We're not special. We just happen to have good people have done the work ourselves and continue to do the work. And the fallacy of the overnight success or these people that have it all figured out is like, first of all, no. There are probably days where Eugene's like, I'm in my survival state about 95% of the time. Well, maybe not you, but maybe you are a unicorn a little bit, but certainly for me.
No, I'm still in survival 20.
Exactly.
Especially with kids,
and,
right?
it's just really interesting to think about people who are like, I've never met anybody who I really look up to truly that I personally know who might be quasi famous. They're always like, I'm not special. I do what I love. Usually I do what I love. I do it with people that I love doing it with. And I've learned through coaching and therapy and million modalities, like how to just be the best version of myself as much as possible. Like, to me, like that's a trick. Yeah. And the much as possible might be 1% more in an executive state. Like that to me is a very iterative return. Like that 1% is not 1% more in your life. That's a 10%, a 20%.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, over the years as my business grew and all that, you meet more and more like cool people, right? Like, these are pretty wealthy people and I'm going to refer to people who are wealthy and happy, right? Just because you're wealthy doesn't mean you're happy.
No.
But the people that I've met that were wealthy and happy, they actually felt successful too. I noticed something really in common because it all starts here, right? In the mind. How they think about things is very different to the average person. That's what I realized was the key game changer is like, we have to examine how we think because guess what? Chances are how you think is creating the reality in your life. Like I can guarantee it now, right? And there's science behind all this too, but that's what I realized. And that was the game changer for me, whether it was as a coach, right? You see what I'm saying? Like the example I give like, you know, as a business coach, people would come and like, what's that classic question sometimes, right? When people are just starting out, it's just like, what do I say to close this sale?
Yeah.
But they don't understand how sales work because if they understood how it worked, they would realize this is the wrong question to begin with.
There's no answer to that
it's
question.
Like,
that
there's no answer to this question. It's clear that you don't understand how it works. So what often is a sign as a coach, I realize is a tell is like when people are asking you questions about what to do, and they're still stuck, it's usually an indicator they're asking the wrong question, because the first thing they have to look at is, how does this thing work, right? Whether it's persuasion, sales, marketing, business growth, et cetera. So that's when I usually just respond with curiosity. I'm like, I don't know what you should say. I'm not technically your ideal client. Tell me more about your person that you can help. What are they up at night worried about? What are the things that are, you know, their symptoms that if you solved it for them, it would mean the world to them. And if you don't know what the answer to that is, the question isn't, what should I say? The question is, go ask them those questions, right? Yeah, go get to know your people and go serve the crap out of them. So that's what I realized is, people who are very successful and happy, they just understand how to think about things. So this is why you see these leaders, even though it feels like the company's going on fire, they're calm. They're collected. They're cool as a cucumber. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that kind of deal. And that's what an executive state feels like.
Yeah. All right, Eugene, tradition on the show is that I'm going to give you the podcasting mic or the podcast hosting mic, and you're going to ask me something. And I'm not going to lie, I'm a little scared. So Eugene, what would you like to ask me that I can answer for you and for everybody listening?
Yeah, let's do it. Over all your years, what would you say was the most transformative lesson you learned in life? Could be about business, but it could also just be about life in general. And how did you come to that realization?
Man, there's a bunch of stuff coming up for me. Good coaching question, by the way. You're not going to tell me the answer? Is that what I'm getting? You're going to wait for me to answer? How do I figure out the answer to this question? Can you tell me? No, I think I go to parenting, being a parent, but I'm going to not go to that one. And I'm going to relate this to the biggest breakthrough that I have had in my life. Biggest breakthrough. And it's not a results oriented one. It's like a spiritual, emotional breakthrough is that I'm enough just how I am. And when I just do what I want to do in the way that I want to do it and trust myself, the world opens up for me. And as somebody who spent 20 years in enterprise and corporate sales, that was a tough lesson to learn because I would literally say when I worked in my corporate career, sometimes I said, I feel like I'm putting on not only a uniform, which the uniform is like, I would always wear a suit, no tie. Like that was what I always wore.
Yeah.
But I'd say, I feel like I'm putting on a uniform, but more than a uniform, I feel like I'm putting on a costume. And there's so much about me that I'm not bringing here because I don't feel like I can. And the ability to just like show up and speak how I want to speak and podcast how I want to podcast. And the result of that has been for me is a shift in executive state in the way that you describe it. Because I no longer am constantly looking for the best way to do it or the how-to way to do it, which is my version of, I think that's probably flight a little bit, like put the onus on somebody else to tell me. I don't know, you tell me, you're the expert on this part of the model, but to me that feels like a flight thing is like, I don't have to take responsibility and somebody else teaches me this thing. And it doesn't work
avoiding
out.
Avoiding the responsibility and the
avoiding ownership. The responsibility. Yeah. Avoiding the responsibility. And it's not that I don't ever do that. Like there are many people that I highly respect with tons of expertise that I like to learn from, but I don't generally relate to most of it as the way any longer. Mm. And it used to be, you know, I was never the salesperson. Like, what's the thing you say? It was like, what's the best way to do sales? When I started my business for myself 4 years ago, what's the best way to get new clients, right? Like most coaches go through that process and that is pure survival. How do you get clients? And the challenge with that question is there's lots of people that would love to sell you systems on how to do that. And my experience without ever spending for them is most of them don't work at all because they're not actually authentic to them. And like you said, the best way I've gotten clients is by being myself and serving the heck out of the people that I'm meant to serve, right? Like you just said, is like, go and ask them what they want from me. As opposed to like here's a warm leads with 20 warm leads a day. I'm like, that seems very outlandish. So and I think, the biggest lesson that I've learned, the biggest lesson that I've learned is who I am at my best, which I would say is my executive state. And then being able to choose into that and in that state, make decisions. and it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But I think this is true as a parent as well. Like for a parenting, as a husband, as a friend, as like all the different roles that we all play, is being more present to that that's possible. Because if I look back, and I was telling somebody, I worked at a startup for a year and a half, and I said that place was one big walking survival state 100% of the time. Everybody there 100% of the time, and knowing that there's something different, and that the something different is I just get to trust myself and make decisions from there. Huge change in my level of joy, satisfaction, business results, podcast results, just everything.
I love it, man.
And it took 41 years to get there. Only 41 years. You know, some people never have it, and other people do it if they work with Eugene when they're like whatever age that is. So
yeah.
But you know, but that's the other thing I'll say. It's like we're all on our journey, and we're all where we're supposed to be. And if you and I would have talked when I was like 25, and you're like, hey, what's your anxiety? I'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, I wouldn't be ready to hear the message.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure if we dug more into your journey, and when we have you back on the podcast, you'd talk about all sorts of times when you'd like have no concept of how you could possibly have that conversation because it wasn't you just weren't ready for it.
Yeah. I mean, I believe we're all just trying to find our way home, whatever home looks like to each person.
Yeah.
And I believe we're just here to help each other find that way. Whether it's,
that's a beautiful place to run a service-based business from too.
Yeah, exactly.
So Eugene, what are you passionate about?
You know, over the years, I realized that's kind of the core mission for me. This is what drives me. This is what pulls me towards purpose, and my mission is essentially just cultivating safe spaces. Because we go into survival when we don't. It's that simple. It's just because you don't feel safe in some way, psychologically or physically.
Yeah.
And it's wild, dude. You know, like, you know, you and I are married. There's research. There was a poll done once where they asked the simple question, who's got your back? You know, 65% of the room said nobody. Ooh. And 55% of those people that said nobody were married. So it just goes to show how unsafe we can feel on a daily basis, even at our own home. So that's why I realized, like, that's the mission for me, because it has a lot of meaning for me. Because if you start feeling safe, whether it's through a coaching conversation, whether it's just creating space for yourself, that's what I'm passionate about. It's just cultivating safe space. It could be with my family, it could be with my clients, it could be with my friends, because not only does that turn the better part of your brain on, it's also healing for me too, because I have experienced the heartbreak of that feeling of not feeling safe to be yourself. I was that kid on a Saturday night with his high school friends getting drunk late into the night, and then waking up Sunday morning to go to church to lead worship for his church friends. You know what I mean? Like, I never felt safe being myself. So I felt the need to be a chameleon. So that's what I'm passionate about, because I know a part of me that's the, what I would call introverted, but that's survival also, right? Which is like, I don't matter. So that's what I'm passionate about, is to create the safe space so that we can truly start connecting with our unique talents or unique strengths. That's what I'm dedicated to. And I've seen it, create some amazing moments for others as well.
Yeah,
when they create that space for themselves too.
Yeah. Also, that's contagious. That's very contagious. One of the things we say in the coach training program that I went through is essence begets essence. I would say that executive state begets executive state. So being around 100%. People that have that ability or live more into that allows us energetically to do that for each other. And I'm sure you've had conversations where it didn't start there, and then where it just elevate, you elevate the conversation, or you elevate the space you're in.
And the tone of the, man. I mean, this is where toxic culture stem from, right? When the leaders are in survival, and it just begets the essence of creating survival in the whole culture. I would imagine like big tech is going through that right now. I know you and I were talking about that, but it's just probably creating cultures of fear and
Sure. Not to call out rich people who don't seem happy, but we won't say any names here for fear of whatever these people could do. That this one person could do whatever he wanted, I'm sure. So I won't say any names here. Probably listening right now. What's the thing you're most proud of?
You know, the thing I'm most proud of is finally making the decision to have a healthy relationship with myself. That was the biggest breakthrough for me. One of the biggest ones was, you know, I remember this leader being asked this cliche question about relationships, which was, you know, how do you find the perfect partner? How do I find the one for me, quote unquote? And that's already survival, by the way. It's your brain going, I have insecurities about myself. I don't like myself. So therefore, I hope there's someone in my life that outside of me that can help complete me, quote unquote, and someone I can hold responsible for my happiness, as if there's such a thing as someone you can hold responsible for your happiness. It's the reason why so many people divorce, I think, right?
Yeah.
And the leader understood it was coming from a survival state. So he asked a very powerful question, which was, would you go out with yourself? And I remember that hit me like a ton of bricks. Number one, because immediately my answer was no. And that was a cool awareness, right? But, you know, it's pretty common in personal development space. People talk about like self-care, self-love. But you know what the bigger breakthrough was? I sat there going, oh my goodness, I can tell my wife I love her and I do all these nice things for her because I love her. I can claim that. But if I don't love me, I'm not doing it for her. There's an ulterior motive here. I'm doing it for me. You see what I'm saying? Like if I believe that I don't matter at a core level, my brain and survival is going, go do nice things for your wife. Maybe you will matter. So I was never doing it for her to begin with. And how do I know this is true? If we ever get into an argument, what's my defense tactic? I bring up the stuff I've done for her as if I was keeping track of it.
Of course.
I did this, I did that. Why don't you do this for me? It was never from a place of true empathy and generosity because your empathy shut off in survival. You're literally disconnecting from people. So whether that's, this was a wake-up call for me as a parent, as a husband, whenever I'm getting mad, I'm literally disconnecting from them. When I'm yelling at my kids because I got triggered, I'm disconnecting from them. So this is why it became that much more important for me. Like you said, it was the 1% that had a 10x return to be just aware of this kind of stuff. Because guess what? We're in the survival on autopilot a lot of times where we're just doing it without even thinking about it because our brains got programmed that way. Because by the time you're 35 years old, 90 to 95% of your brain goes on autopilot, right? Habits. Yeah. It includes your perspectives about life. It includes your beliefs about things. It includes your thinking. So anyway, that was the big aha moment for me that was the biggest breakthrough for me is just get yourself what you need. Listen to yourself. Yeah. Take good care of yourself. Invest in yourself. Because people who don't value themselves don't invest in themselves. You're in the lone wolf mentality or you're in the overworking mentality because you don't believe you're worthy. Not good enough, right? Like you were sharing earlier. But compared to what? We got these programmings that made it a reality that there's such a thing as good enough. But like, compared to what? Who set the rules for that? Right? It's ridiculous. Yeah. There's no such thing because you're priceless.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So Eugene, I've been waiting to ask you this question. What's something you're afraid might actually be true about you?
What's something I'm afraid of that actually might?
Afraid that might actually be true about, or what's something that you were afraid might actually be true about you?
It's like a dual-edged kind of thing. The first response in my mind that came to mind is kind of like a fear of success thing, right? Like, what if it was true that I was meant to share this work? That this is actually my purpose in life because it's going to be so scary. It's going to be filled with uncertainty. And I have my bad days and my good days, right? Like my struggling days. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a fear because I was a big planner. Like I need to be certain about my future, even though that's impossible. So I plan for the future. But over the years, I've learned to get a little bit more comfortable with just not knowing. Because what do we actually control? But that's also scary as hell, right? Of just like trusting that. I don't know if that's the answer, like if that's the answering the question. But that's the first thought that came to mind. It's kind of like a fear of success thing, right? It's like, what if I could do this? Right?
Yeah, no, I think that's like be afraid. Like, well, it'd be so, and you mentioned you're a highly educated, intelligent person who had a career that you could have rode out until you retired with no problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
With no problem. Yeah. And you probably would have excelled at it and made a ton of money. And at some point you would have probably gone on autopilot with it.
Yeah. I remember when I quit two times, actually, the career. The second time was as a supervisor for LA County. And I remember sitting there because the fear was also there of what if I can't do it? What if I can't do this?
Sure.
But then I think also the deeper fear was less like, what if I can? But that means like, I would have to take
risk. That would mean I would have to be okay with not knowing. That would mean I would have to be just, you know. Yeah, that's kind of what came up for me.
Yeah, nice. So we start to wrap up here. Just have a couple more questions for you. So how do you see the world?
I see the world as a friendly place. And I go deep into the rabbit hole about this, but long story short, if you examine it at a even molecular level, we really do have everything we need. What do I mean by this? It's like, you know, your heart's beating over 100,000 times per day through 60,000 miles of blood vessels in your body. That's enough miles to go around the world two times. You stretch out your DNA end to end. It's enough to go over the moon, back to the moon and back.
Yeah.
Right? More than six times over. Your lungs are breathing 2 million liters of air every single day. And within seconds, it's transforming that oxygen to every cell in your body. And I believe the world's a friendly place because the question I ask myself is, are we figuring any of this stuff out? Are you telling your heart to beat? Are you telling your lungs to breathe? But if you simply relax, if you get yourself out of survival, your body just moves back to balance. It naturally goes back to balance and healing. And I've come to believe that whatever emotions you feel every day, the stress, the anxiety, if you stop perceiving that as a threat, it's your mind's way of helping your mind get back into balance. Does that make sense? Just like your body will naturally go back into balance. Your feelings are there to help your mind go back into balance because your feelings are there because of your memories, right? It's a record of the past. It's meant for memory purposes. This is why highly emotional moments, you remember more details, don't you?
That's
the point of the emotions. Yeah. The function is to help you remember. But the same applies for uncomfortable scenarios, right? The pain you've experienced, the heartbreaks you've experienced, and that's what we're remembering in the current moment. And we're thinking it's because of what's happening outside of us, but it's never what's happening outside. It's the meaning we're giving that current moment. So anyway, what I've come to realize at the end of the day then is just like, wow, it's kind of like our bodies are very, and our minds are extremely intelligent, like that it has this aspect of it figures itself out. My goodness, how great is that? We live in a friendly world that we're able to access everything we need if we choose to see it. A lot of people might not see it when you're in survival, right? Because you're living in a hostile place when you're in survival. Yeah. That's how you see the world.
I love it. Dr. Eugene, how can people connect with you, find you, learn more, read, see videos, all the things that you'd like them to do, connect?
Yeah, I offer a free training. It's on my homepage, destinyhacks.co, that you can sign up for if you want access to that. Or my podcast, neurohackingpodcast.com. I just speak science and all this kind of stuff. And I have a community I'm building. It's called Neurohacking School. So that's at neurohackingschool.com, where if you wanted to join, two calls with me per month, right? And you get access to all of my digital training content as well.
Awesome. We're going to put all of those in the show notes so people aren't writing furiously. Awesome, Eugene. Well, it has been amazing having you on. We talked about this a year ago, I think, and here we are finally. You've had a couple things go on, like a new child and building your business, and we made it happen finally. I'm so glad we did this.
Yeah.
I think this conversation was pretty executive state. I feel pretty good over here. What do you think? You know, you're the expert on this. What do you
conversation.
Think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fun. I think the thing I will say about this for me, I've heard you speak on this, is for me, I know when I'm in my executive state, when I'm having fun. So I am most committed to fun and play in my life.
Yes.
And I have very clear, I have such access to fun and such access to this is not fun.
Right.
Like for me, there's like a very fine line where I'm like, oh, this is not fun. And I'm like, oh yeah. Like, and now that I'm thinking about this, I'm like, oh yeah, survival state for sure. For sure. Yeah. And a lot of the things that I don't find fun will put me right into survival state. For example, things like spreadsheets. I'm like, oh, wait, how can I either run away from this or fight it and do and drive through, grind through it?
Exactly. And the cool part about all of this is it's usually not the experience that's not fun. It's the meaning we're giving the experience, right? It's not the spreadsheet. It's the meaning, whatever it is, right? Like, oh, this is going to, you know, ruin my career. I'm wasting time or whatever. But anyway, that's a rabbit hole. Another rabbit hole we could go down.
Another rabbit hole for next time we have you on here in the next couple of weeks or so. So Eugene, last thing, leave us with some short and sweet words of wisdom?
Oh man, I feel like I already shared the one, which was that invest in yourself. The most important relationship that you'll ever have is the one with yourself. Because if you're not treating yourself well, you're surviving from yourself. And that's going to create a never-ending loop of suffering for you.
There it is. Invest in yourself. Beautiful, Eugene. Best wishes to you, the family, the little ones. Stay in your executive state as much as possible. Also, executive state is probably a lot harder to access when you're tired.
Yes.
Being tired generates more survival. But yeah, it was brilliant to have you on. We'll have you come back on. We're going to have another episode here soon or later where we're just going to like call it the rabbit hole episode. And because I love rabbit holes too. We're just going to go and we're going to go there.
Anytime, man.
All right. So good to have you on, Eugene. Take care. And we will talk again very soon.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and give us a shout out or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.